This is a podcast from Consilio. We bring people together to create better places.
Hello and welcome to Poles Apart, a podcast from Consilio where we look at the property, planning and political news from across the capital. I'm Luke Francis, a former Labour Party advisor.
And I'm Nathan Parsad-Wyatt, a former Conservative Party advisor.
And this week we will be looking in depth at Camden. And I'm delighted that we will be joined a little bit later on by Councillor Danny Beals. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, looking forward to that. But welcome back, Luke, after...
Thank you.
You know,
mention
weeks
the tan.
Off,
mention the tan.
After, well, yeah, you do look quite tanned, actually.
Yeah.
But, yeah... After your sabbatical for, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Good trip?
Two and a half weeks. Yeah, wonderful trip, thank you.
Where did you go?
Down the West Coast. Where did you go? What did you do? We drove from San Francisco down to San Diego.
Very nice.
Yosemite and Santa Barbara and LA. It's
very pretty, nice.
Yeah.
Very
would,
nice.
Would recommend.
Good to be back?
Not really. It was 12 degrees and drizzly.
Oh.
So, no, it's great to be back. And I've come back just in time to be swept up in local election fever. So we are just over a week away at the time of recording. And I suspect both of us are going to be out on the doorsteps quite a lot over the next week. But how has the picture changed in my absence while I've been topping up this wonderful tan?
Well, the Prime Minister and Chancellor have officially been fined for lockdown breaches. Boris Johnson visited Ukraine to see President Zelensky. Elon Musk has bought Twitter. And Keir Starmer apparently also had a beer and some food at a work event during lockdown. So,
it's all quiet.
Not missed too much. But far more importantly than that, as you say, we're just over a week away now from the local elections. Postal votes have landed, votes have been cast, and this is the final sprint. And for those of us involved in elections or previously stood as candidates, which both of us have, unsuccessfully,
yep.
This is a moment of absolute nervousness, tiredness, and I suppose a bit of excitement for candidates that it's all coming to an end. So while the rest of us are just switching on to the fact that there's a vote next week, most of the candidates have been fighting it for months and months and months. And
yep.
I would just say that whatever political party you're involved with and whatever your politics, it does take a lot to put yourself up for election. You're opening yourself up for a lot of criticism these days and, sadly, all sorts of abuse. And at a local level, there's just a lot of things outside of your control. You know, what's happening nationally at number 10 has, you know, is not your responsibility, but you will be on the front line.
It is, it's often a bit of a thankless task, local government. But actually, you know, the councillors that we know work incredibly hard.
Absolutely.
The majority
of them, and regardless of party. So, anyway, fair play to everyone standing next week and a massive, massive good luck from both of us, mainly to the Conservative candidates, of course.
Well, but I mean, let's not pick a side.
Depends where you are.
Yeah. I mean, when I stood, it was in one of the safest Conservative wards in London, I think. Caulfield?
Yeah, in Caulfield.
Yeah. That was not a good response on the doorstep.
Well, I think I knocked on some doors for the other side during that campaign.
That's hurtful.
No, I didn't. I'm joking. Yeah. But anyway, talking about elections, so normally we start the podcast with a couple of stories from the week, but I think given we're so close to poll day, let's just go in depth to what the picture looks like. And we had some polling come out last week that specifically focused on London. It was an Opinium Sky poll and assessed the changes on the 2018 results, so the last time these elections happened. And it had Labour up just by 1 point on 45, Conservatives on 25, down 4%, the Lib Dems unchanged at 12%, and the Green Party up 2 points at 10%. And it's quite interesting because 12 weeks ago or whenever it was that we launched this podcast, and the first episode was all about Battleground London, you know, what does the picture look like, what might change? And we kind of concluded after speaking to Damien from Servation that... you know, it is possible that Labour have reached the high water mark in London, and it's a huge obstacle to overcome to take any of the sort of outstanding boroughs, if you like Barnet, Westminster, Wandsworth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think 12 weeks on, it's sort of a similar picture, really.
Yeah, well, I think having spoken to a few sort of figures in the Labour Party in London, I think one of the biggest concerns from their perspective at the minute is expectation management.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you said, we were talking, what was it, 3 months ago now about, you know, realistically, there's not a huge amount of headroom for the Labour Party in London.
No.
There aren't big gains. And, you know, behind the scenes, the Labour Party thinking is that actually a good night for Labour isn't necessarily, you know, big gains of sort of councils and taking control. But, you know, consolidating that 2018 position, you know, maybe nicking some seats in some of those Tory councils. But yeah, expectation management seems to be the order of the day with a week to go for the Labour Party.
I think it's really interesting as well, knocking on doors over the last few weeks and sort of thinking about the reasons why people vote in local elections. I think it's really hard to predict because there are 100 different reasons why people vote in local elections. I mean, I spoke to lots of people last week and sort of said, you know, how are you going to vote? And, you know, some people understandably are voting on the national picture. Mm-hmm. Others are voting very much on the services their local council provides or doesn't provide, things they're happy with, things they're unhappy with. So it is very difficult to predict. It does feel like Labour are putting quite a lot of resource into Barnet. And I think that is, you know, probably shouldn't make predictions, but I think Barnet is probably
The lowest hanging fruit.
And you know, Keir Starmer went there with Sadiq Khan to launch the local election campaign, and they've been pushing quite a lot of resource in there. So I suspect that Labour HQ think that as well. But obviously Wandsworth, Westminster and right across London, it's going to be a big challenge. I think also the other thing is in a number of these marginal wards within these boroughs, there are probably enough votes on a kind of 35% turnout for both parties to win.
Yep, definitely.
And a lot of that's going to come down to turnout. So how motivated are your voters to actually come out and vote? And then a lot of that is about the ground game. Have you done the hard work?
The weather on polling day, as we've both experienced.
Well, I think that's less of a thing. But if you're one of the hardy people that votes in a local election, you're probably going to come out rain or shine. But I think it's more about, do you know where your supporters are? You know, have you spent the last 2 years, year, 6 months knocking on doors, finding out exactly where your voters are in order to turn them out on the day? Or are you doing that indiscriminately? And I think that's why it's going to be, you know, a lot of it's going to be based on the ground game. But we don't have long to wait. And next Friday, in a change from the usual schedule of podcasts every fortnight, we're going to be releasing a special episode of Polls Apart, talking about all the key results from across the capital. With some special guests and analysis.
Think sort of audio Dimbleby.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. You know, what happened last night with our dulcet tones?
Yeah.
What could possibly be better?
Very early in the morning.
Yeah, very early. We'll probably both be absolutely knackered. But this will be the first election I won't be going to account in a very long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, polls will close at 10.
We should go for dinner.
And then we can go get a pint.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Which will be nice.
Yeah.
But today, we're going to talk about a borough which is highly unlikely to change hands next week, bar a complete earthquake in the opposite side that nobody's picked up, and that is, of course, Camden. So, Luke, tell us about that.
Yeah, although, interestingly, Camden is one of the few boroughs in London where you have not insignificant opposition groups that of all the political spectrum. So you've got a decent Tory opposition group, you know, not enormous, but it's a very sort of strongly held Labour administration.
It's well organised as well.
It is well organised. So you've got the Lib Dems, you've got the Conservatives, and you've got the Greens, who will all be looking to take sort of chunks out of the Labour majorities on May the 5th. But no, as you say, it's very, very unlikely to change. And we will be speaking to Councillor Danny Beals very shortly, who is the... Let me get this right. He's the cabinet member for investing in communities, culture and an inclusive economy, which gives him the longest business card in local government.
Yeah, it does.
But I think essentially, you know, one of the big parts of the brief alongside the economic role is planning and regeneration. And Danny is a very well respected and well thought of figure in local government in London. And he's been in post since 2017. So we're going to have a chat to him a bit about what the political driving forces are in Camden, what the priorities are for the Labour administration, how they've dealt with the various challenges that they've faced over the last 4 years and beyond, and what, you know, subject to them still being in place on May the 6th, you know, what their priorities are going to be for the next 5 years. And, you know, it'll be interesting to hear from him. It's a very diverse borough. You know, up at the north of that borough, you've got sort of leafy suburbia. You've got Highgate, you've got Hampstead. And then, you know, down towards the south and the southeast of that borough, you're into sort of the West End, and you've got King's Cross and you've got Covent Garden and everything that's going on around there.
It's a pretty diverse borough.
It's a very diverse borough. And actually, one thing that will be quite interesting to hear is, you know, Danny has been very clear that housing is his priority and the Labour administration's priority in Camden. But, you know, there is a big sort of economic push there as well. You know, job creation is a big part of his brief. And, you know, we want to chat to him about how the West End has fared over the last couple of years and what the future holds for the West End. So it'd be really interesting to get his take on that.
I mean, when it comes to housing, I think they recently decided not to deliver the government's First Homes Initiative. Was that proposal to offer discounts to first-time buyers?
Yep.
And I think they opted out in favour of...
Well, yeah. Well, they made a statement, so this was about a month ago, I think. They put out a statement saying they weren't going to pursue the government's Homes First or First Homes
initiative,
which essentially offered discounts to first-time buyers. And in their statement, Camden Council said that they were going to continue to prioritise the delivery of affordable housing at rents related to local incomes. So, you know, affordable rental property is sort of their absolute priority in Camden at the minute, which is, you know, probably a little bit unusual for some London boroughs. You know, building homes for first-time buyers is, particularly, I guess, in outer London more so than inner maybe, but, you know, is a real priority for a lot of administrations.
I think it probably reflects this. There is a political element to all this as well, I would have thought, which is, yeah. You know, it ties into that, you know, it goes to the heart of Conservative ideology for home ownership to be a priority, mm-hmm. and to encourage people to become homeowners, far more so than obviously the Labour sort of ideology of actually just making people comfortable in the current situation. And I was looking at a poll actually that looked at one of the biggest predictors for in the 2019 general election. What is the best prediction as to whether you're going to vote Conservative? And effectively, owning your home outright gives you a 33-point lead for the Conservatives. Owning your home with a mortgage gives an 8-point lead for the Conservatives. And then if you're a social or private renter, you're likely to support Labour between 10 and 20 points.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
You know, I think there is an element of, yes, we've got to deal with the housing situation in front of us. And I can understand completely the motivation behind mixed communities and making things genuinely affordable mm-hmm. For people to rent homes in Camden.
Another challenge for them as well is the, you know, the lack of brownfield sites and the lack of any big development sites in Camden.
Yeah.
You know, so they are working with a lot of infill or regen, a lot of smaller sites, which maybe tend to lend themselves slightly better to a, you know, a rental market than it does ownership, sort of outright ownership. But enough of us speculating.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't wait to hear more about the commercial aspects of the brief as well. You know, West End, we had Councillor Matthew Green from Westminster on a podcast not too long ago where he was talking about, you know, the sort of Westminster side of the West End. So it'll be really interesting to hear what Danny thinks about the Camden side of the West End. And, of course, all of those other huge developments happening around King's Cross and the development of the Knowledge Quarter, et cetera, as well. So, yeah,
let's get him on. And I'm delighted to say that we are now joined by Councillor Danny Beals, who is the Cabinet Member for, let me get this right, is it Investing Communities, Culture and Inclusive Economy? Is that right, Danny?
Yeah, that's right. It's a bit of a mouthful, but yeah, that's right.
One of the longest titles in local government. Enormous business cards. Thank you so much for joining us, Danny.
No problem at all. Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah, I guess in kind of layman's terms, it's my portfolio covers planning, regeneration, economic development and kind of culture in Camden.
So one of the busiest people in local government, I imagine.
Yeah, got a fair few emails kind of flooding in. Yeah, keeps me on my toes.
And, you know, particularly busy at the moment with the local election just over a week away. How's it all going? How are the doors?
Yeah, no, yes, it's, you know, it's par for the course, I guess. But yeah, kind of not a minute with the feet up at the moment. It's kind of knocking on doors relentlessly, delivering leaflets, lots of conversations being had right across the borough and also kind of supporting some other neighbouring boroughs as well, where there's some kind of close fights taking place like Barnet and Westminster. But yeah, no, in Camden, I think broadly really positive. I was out this morning in my own ward, really kind of positive reaction, I think, to the kind of messages we're getting across. I think obviously the national picture, people are kind of quite fed up, I think it's fair to say. And, you know, some of the stuff that's being kind of debated in the press at the moment about things like the cost of living crisis, you know, are really hitting home and it's coming across on the doorstep. So, you know, people are feeling those energy prices, people are feeling increasing costs at the shops and kind of national insurance rises and kind of wage stagnation. So, yeah I'd say that's kind of coming up time and time again. And then, you know, your bread and butter kind of issues as a local council, you know, the bins, exactly, street issues, dog poo, you know, the bread and butter issues for us local councillors as well.
It's the glamour of the job.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to sort of remember a local elections that will be quite as dominated by national issues as this one. I think, like you say, the cost of living crisis in particular, you know, just being felt universally.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, I probably have to look back to the last Labour government when there was such a kind of national, towards the end of the last Labour government, when there was such a nationally focused kind of narrative of debate. You know, it definitely feels like people are coming kind of back to Labour who perhaps left over the last kind of 10 years to me. Yeah, I think certainly people feel let down by the government. I think, I do think that, you know, one of the challenges is that there's, in a sense, a distrust perhaps generally of politicians that's now kind of becoming a bit more pervasive. You know, people seeing the government break the laws, disrespect kind of regulations they set. I think it does kind of damage all of us when politicians nationally act like that. So yeah, that is something, you know, overcoming voter apathy, you know, really encouraging people to still go out and you know, put a ballot paper in on election day. You know, what difference will it make? You know, some of the reactions when politicians nationally don't seem to care or do anything or respect the rules they set. You know, you've got to make the case even more why voting matters still, while it can change things locally, despite seemingly kind of relentless challenges coming from national government and people feeling it at a local level.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, fingers crossed for May the 5th for you guys. I can say that. Well, I'm allowed to be biased on this podcast. when my co-presenter Nathan's not here, I'm allowed to show my political colours. Well, let's talk a little bit about you, about your role in Camden. I think one of the things that you've been really clear about when did you take up the post? Is it 2017?
Yeah, I think so. To be honest, the last kind of 4 years with COVID, etc., it's felt like a blink of an eye. But yeah, I think it's kind of four, almost 5 years I've been in portfolio now, yeah.
And it's been, you know, a period of probably real change in the borough. And one of the things you've sort of been really clear about being your sort of main political priority has been addressing the housing crisis, which, you know, is probably true for many London boroughs, but nowhere is it felt more acutely than Camden. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about what your priorities are when it comes to delivering housing in Camden.
Well, I think, you know, as you say, kind of housing is a really top priority. It comes up time and time again from residents when we speak to them about the issues that matter most, probably second top issue that comes up. Rent, you know, private sector rents have just gone up exponentially. Massive explosion of kind of short-term let accommodation in central London, changing the nature of the market, massive overcrowding and disrepair issues as well. So for us, delivering better quality homes across all sectors, including the private rented sector, and delivering more generally affordable homes is a massive priority. You know, we've tried to use the full extent of our planning powers to make sure that the kind of market responds to that challenge. I think we've got, you know, really tough requirements on developers. You know, we've increased our kind of offsite payments. We've stuck to the 50% kind of target for affordable housing. We apply a kind of target for affordable housing on all sizes of sites, even small sites, for example. And we kind of fought to get that change introduced as part of our last local plan. And then we've also kind of acted directly. So we've got a very large regeneration program that's kind of directly funded and delivered by the council. So our community investment program, SIP, and we've delivered a kind of over 500 council homes since 2010. And, you know, I think, you know, whilst that's great, I think we know that there's lots more to do. And we hear that time and time again, you know, it's good what you've done, but, you know, we need many, many more. And despite the need going up, our kind of financing, the ability to kind of fund that, it's become ever more difficult for various reasons. Yeah. So yeah, it's a big challenge.
Yeah. And I suppose, what are the sort of the unique challenges? I think across the board, we're seeing, you know, development costs increasing.
Yeah.
Developers looking to push back on, you know, particularly you were saying about the 50% affordable delivery on projects, and developers sort of needing to push back on that to, you know, prove viability and to deliver and build out projects.
Yeah.
Are there any other sort of unique challenges that you think that Camden face that make that difficult?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think building costs has gone up exponentially. I would say where the market's at, interestingly, you know, a big concern 5 years ago was, you know, the market wanting to prioritize, you know, want really struggling viability-wise to build affordable, only wanted to build private housing. The challenge we're in now really is the market doesn't want to build private housing in Camden. It doesn't want to do housing delivery and therefore affordable as part of it. So we really struggle with developers now on private sites trying to get them to deliver housing full stop. The big market shift now in central London and in Camden is kind of commercial usage. Obviously the Knowledge Quarter, which we're very proud of around King's Cross and the transformation there and the potential for even more kind of inclusive growth to come from that in the future. I think the market sees the huge potential of the expansion of the Knowledge Quarter. Office-led development, you know, is financially viable, but, you know, selling very expensive private homes actually it's difficult in a post-Brexit world. The prices have kind of stagnated a bit. As you say, build costs have gone up. So yeah, hotels, student accommodation, and kind of commercial Knowledge Quarter development is kind of where the market wants to be. So yeah, we're trying to actually wrestle them back a bit and say, well, fine, fair enough in some places, but actually we've got housing delivery targets, we've got housing need, we need you to do this. And that's a real struggle. And I think some of the planning changes that have happened, so the kind of permitted development rights, kind of simplification of use classes, the stuff that's being suggested now by Gove and the planning bill, you know, is all going against that trend of good local planning and the delivery of affordable housing. So it's really tough.
Yeah. And I think you just touched on it as well, but it's such a diverse borough, Camden, that you've got, you know, you've got the, like you said, the Knowledge Quarter stuff, you've got the thing, all the development and change going on around to the King's Cross and down towards Holborn and Covent Garden Way. And then up at the north of the borough, you've got sort of, you know, what are my classes, sort of like leafy suburbia, you know, you've got sort of Highgate and Hampstead. How do you balance sort of the competing sort of demands and local views and on development and delivery in such a diverse borough?
It is a challenge, I think. You know, I think we have a really active borough, huge amount of amenity groups, conservation area committees, neighbourhood forums. We've got the most neighbourhood plans in London. I think I probably get this wrong, which would be really terrible, but I think we're sort of 7 neighbourhood plans. We've got others in development. I think we had more than all of London combined at one point. Which I, you know, shows the level of interest in planning, in neighbourhood planning in Camden. And that bears out in the planning process. You know, people come forward. I think we've got really significant development being proposed at the moment over in Murphy's Yard in Kentish Town and the O2 site by Landsec in West Hampstead. You know, really significant developments are being suggested there. You know, we've had thousands of people engage in that process, which shows kind of the level of interest. I mean, I think it's a challenge. You know, we're a very, very dense borough. We've got a housing delivery target from the government of over 1,000 homes a year. We have very, very, very small brownfield areas left, really, to build. You know, much of it is kind of is small sites looking at, you know, increasing density to get that delivery and to get those affordable homes we need. So it's difficult. I mean, I think the things we try to do is we in some areas where we know there's going to be significant development in future proposed, we've looked at, you know, preempting that with planning frameworks for the areas. So we've done quite a few planning frameworks, you know, involved people quite extensively in those processes up front, and, you know, not waiting just for kind of applications to come, but getting early discussion about community priorities. Mm-hmm. We've looked at kind of innovative ways of engaging people outside the planning process as kind of traditionally done. Mm-hmm. Had a couple of neighbourhood assemblies over in Euston where the HS2 development is taking place, and over in Gospel Oak and West Hampstead where there's kind of major estate regeneration work taking place. So yeah, getting a representative group of local residents to come together, form an assembly, meet multiple times to discuss kind of shaping the community. So yeah, kind of looking at different ways beyond just, you know, the posters going up on lampposts and waiting for comments to come on that planning application next door.
I think it's one thing we've found, you know, certainly over the last, well, during the pandemic in particular, but having to find new ways to engage people and consult, you know, in some ways it was difficult and it made it harder not being able to be on the ground, to be chatting to people, you know, out in communities. But I think the flip side of that was also that we had to look at new ways of engaging people and different, you know, forums in which to engage. And what it's done is, I think, helped to some extent, I think it's still an awful long way to go, but to some extent helped reach some of those more difficult to reach parts of communities and people who, you know, often aren't engaged in what, you know, I mean, let's be fair. I mean, the two people who work in it, but, you know, it can often be quite a boring, you know.
Dry, yeah.
And it's, you know, people have got other priorities, you know, they're living their lives and, you know, they're trying to get on and do the things they want to do. Getting involved in local planning applications isn't always the top of people's list, but actually, you know, one of the things we've seen over the last couple of years is that we can engage more people. People do want to sort of engage in how their communities are going to be shaped and, you know, have a say in what happens. And I think that's the challenge we've sort of seen everywhere. And then one area I wanted to touch on is, you know, when looking at how diverse a borough Camden is down in that sort of towards the southern end and towards the eastern end is where you touched on sort of the west end. And, you know, you've got one of Europe's premier sort of commercial districts, but has been hugely affected over the last 2 years with the pandemic, and obviously footfall sort of went off a cliff. And your experience of that, and, you know, both the last 2 years, but also what the future holds and how the West End and that area recovers and what comes next for it.
Yeah, no, God, yeah, it's been an incredibly difficult period. Obviously, you know, COVID's impacted every aspect of life. And the West End was pretty much felt like a ghost town during that period. And I think there was kind of a triple whammy, really, of, you know, the traditional audiences for the West End, you know, big student populations in Bloomsbury and Camden, like 30,000 students in Camden a year, massive tourism to central London, and then the huge mass of commercial, you know, sites and workers using kind of hospitality and kind of leisure sector down there, and all of that disappearing overnight. Mm-hmm. Incredibly difficult. I mean, the kind of immediate term, obviously councils were distributing grants, we were doing kind of rapid stuff to try and support businesses to kind of survive during that period. You know, we've been trialing some different things during that period, and certainly now during recovery and renewal, still looking to make that a priority around the West End. I mean, I'm fairly positive about the West End, I think, going forward. I said that during the pandemic, did a couple of these sorts of calls and said, you know, I think the kind of the death of central London, the death of the office is a bit overrated. I think in reality, we're going to go back to some sort of medium way. I think people will realise that being at home alone all the time on Zoom all the time isn't for them. I think most people want to kind of have a hybrid, flexible approach, and lots of people's jobs will kind of return. And, you know, seeing, you know, the Google land scrape or whatever it's called, you know, nearing completion, you know, Google actually not say, oh God, what have we done opening this massive office in Camden? Actually, you know, full steam ahead on that. And during the pandemic, purchase a massive second site at St. Giles in Camden, a second campus. You know, I think demonstrates the kind of faith that mass, you know, big significant companies have in central London and in Camden. The Knowledge Quarter, we've not seen at all a decrease in interest in Knowledge Quarter uses. We've had significant new applications still come forward for new labs, MSD labs over in King's Cross, etc., etc. So I think central London does have to change. The things that were wrong with central London and undermining it anyway were exacerbated and are still flaws. So it's too polluted, it's too car dominated, like, you know, compared to most central European cities. You know, look what's happening in Paris and Barcelona and other places. You know, we know that people to shop, to visit, actually to work, they want it to be a much nicer environment. So I think we're looking at, you know, we had a massive streeteries program, so like outside eating and dining, we didn't withdraw that once the pandemic ended. I know some boroughs did, you know, they saw it as very temporary. That we think that's part of the long-term transition of the city. And we want to see more space given over to pedestrians and to cyclists and to visitors. So we're looking actually, and in our manifesto, is increasing the number of street trees. We've opened a new park actually off Tottenham Court Road, a former road, and as part of the West End project. We closed the road and turned it into a park. We're looking to do more of that. And I think you know, culture and leisure uses are the future, really. I mean, I think some people are very keen on kind of changing the nature of central London to be more residential. My personal view is I think that, you know, one of the issues that the evening and nighttime economy has struggled with is the kind of proximity of the residential population of central London. There's been some, you know, conflict, the kind of, you know, decrease of the evening and nighttime economy in central London over the last kind of 15 years. My personal view is if your view is that the future of central London is to be residential led, I think probably that will be a further kind of nail in the coffin of the evening nighttime economy in central London. Yeah, my personal view is I do think there's resilience of commercial uses, of creative industries, of the Knowledge Quarter, and actually cultural and leisure uses, we need to really expand them. Obviously, you know, retail will diminish in its priority because of changing online habits, but I think there are other commercial uses we can definitely look to expand in central London. And yeah, I think local government has a big role to play in facilitating those changes, and trying to reorientate the city to be a kind of much better, much more welcoming environment for people to come.
And is that something that we can, you know, fingers crossed, the right result on May the 5th, we can see as sort of being one of Labour-led Camden's sort of priorities for the next 5 years?
Yeah, definitely. So we've got a high streets programme at the moment. We're looking to extend and expand that, kind of changing our high streets, improving them, working with local businesses and residents to do that. We work very closely with many of our bids, Hope and Bid. We've got Fitzrovia Bid, Hatton Garden Bid, Camden Town Bid. We work very, very well and very close with them. And we're trialling different schemes, Camden Town closing Buck Street, potentially looking at different sorts of uses, maybe market on Buck Street, which used to be a kind of free road off the high street, you know, future of Camden High Street. You know, we've talked before about elements of it potentially changing, maybe being semi-pedestrianised or closed for periods. We've kind of done a massive transformation on Tottenham Court Road and certainly want to look at, you know, other aspects. We've been working with Shaftesbury over Seven Dials area and reducing traffic in there. And I think we're very, very open-minded about changes that could take place and really want to work with residents, businesses, partners. You know, we've got big institutions down there who are also keen to work with us, like British Museum, etc., who want to make the environment much, you know, more welcoming for their visitors too. So I'm quite hopeful. I think some of the changes that have happened, actually, as I say, street use, outside dining, London was so far behind the curve. You know, you go to so many central European cities and you could sit outside a cafe and have a drink, have something to eat. In London, it just wasn't done for various like arcane reasons about tables and chairs licenses and just kind of attitude, I think, of about what the city was. And I think we need to change our mindset, really. Like, it's not about moving people in cars as quickly as possible through central London. Actually, it's about quietening the streets, about giving more space to pedestrians, letting people dwell and sit and enjoy. And as I say, creating kind of more greenery, pocket parks, you know, off kind of main road spaces where it feels much less traffic dominated, and also kind of supporting a kind of much better quality environment as well.
It sounds like it's going to be another busy 5 years for you. Hopefully you get a week off after the elections. You get a whole week off? Or
I don't think so. I think we're kind of Saturday after we're kind of signing in if we're re-elected and training, and it kind of kicks off immediately. But
enjoy the Friday.
Indeed, yeah. Friday will be it.
Well, I'll make sure I'll come over to Camden the next week to knock on some doors before the election.
Amazing. I'll hold you to that.
Okay. Councillor Danny Bills, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks very much, Luke.
Well, that's it from us. Thanks for listening to another episode of Polls Apart. We'll be back next Friday, as I mentioned earlier, to bring you all the results and analysis from the London local elections, hopefully with a nice group of special guests who can provide insight and analysis along the way too. So, but that's it for now. Speak soon. Don't forget to like and subscribe. See you later. Bye, 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 bye.